At last the mountains were full, and the hillsides spilled into the streams, built them to freshets, and sent them roaring down the canyons into the valleys. The rain beat on steadily, and the streams and the little rivers edged up to the bank sides and worked at willows and tree roots, bent the willows deep into the current, cut out the roots of cottonwoods, and brought down the trees. The muddy water whirled along the bank sides and crept up the banks until at last it spilled over into the fields, into the orchards, into the cotton patches where the black stems stood. Level fields became lakes, broad and gray, and the rain whipped up the surfaces. Then the water poured over the highways and cars moved slowly, cutting the water ahead and leaving a boiling, muddy wake behind. The earth whispered under the beat of the rain, and the streams thundered under the churning freshets. When the first rain started, the migrant people huddled in their tents, saying, "It'll soon be over," and asking, "How long's it likely to go on?" And when the puddles formed, the men went out in the rain with shovels and built little dikes around the tents. The beating rain worked at the canvas until it penetrated and sent streams down. And then the little dikes washed out and the water came inside, and the streams wet the beds and the blankets. The people sat in wet clothes. They set up boxes and put planks on the boxes. Then, day and night, they sat on the planks. Beside the tents, the old cars stood, and water fouled the ignition wires, and water fouled the carburetors. The little gray tents stood in lakes, and at last the people had to move. Then the cars wouldn't start because the wires were shorted, and if the engines would run, deep mud engulfed the wheels. And the people waded away, carrying their wet blankets in their arms. They splashed along, carrying the children, carrying the very old in their arms. And if a barn stood on high ground, it was filled with people, shivering and hopeless. Then some went to the relief offices, and they came sadly back to their own people. "These rules, you got to be here a year before you can get relief. They say the government's gonna help. They don't know when." And gradually, the greatest terror of all came along. "They ain't gonna be no kind of work for 3 months." In the barns, the people sat huddled together, and a terror came over them, and their faces were gray with terror. The children cried with hunger, and there was no food. Then the sickness came, pneumonia, and measles that went to the eyes and to the mastoids, and the rain fell steadily. And the water flowed over the highways, for the culverts could not carry the water. Then from the tents, from the crowded barns, groups of sodden men went out, their clothes slopping rags, their shoes muddy pulp. They splashed out through the water to the towns, to the country stores, to the relief offices, to beg for food, to cringe and beg for food, to beg for relief. To try to steal, to lie. And under the begging, and under the cringing, a hopeless anger began to smolder. And in the little towns, pity for the sodden men changed to anger, and anger at the hungry people changed to fear of them. Then sheriffs swore in deputies in droves, and orders were rushed for rifles, for tear gas, for ammunition. Then the hungry men crowded the alleys behind the stores to beg for bread, to beg for rotting vegetables, to steal when they could. Frantic men pounded on the doors of the doctors, and the doctors were busy. And sad men left word at country stores for the coroner to send a car. The coroners were not too busy. The coroner's wagons backed up through the mud and took out the dead. And the rain pattered relentlessly down, and the streams broke their banks and spread out over the country. Huddled under sheds, lying in wet hay, The hunger and the fear bred anger. Then boys went out, not to beg, but to steal. And men went out weakly, to try to steal. The sheriff swore in new deputies and ordered new rifles, and the comfortable people in tight houses felt pity at first, and then distaste, and finally hatred for the migrant people. In the wet hay of leaking barns, babies were born to women who panted with pneumonia, and old people curled up in corners and died that way, so that the coroners could not straighten them. At night, the frantic men walked boldly to hen roosts and carried off the squawking chickens. If they were shot at, they did not run, but splashed sullenly away, and if they were hit, they sank tiredly in the mud. The rain stopped. On the fields the water stood, reflecting the gray sky, and the land whispered with moving water. And the men came out of the barns, out of the sheds. They squatted on their hams and looked out over the flooded land, and they were silent. And sometimes they talked very quietly. No work till spring. No work. And if no work, no money. No food. Fella had a team of horses, had to use them to plow and cultivate and mow. Wouldn't think of turning them out to starve when they wasn't working. Them's horses. We're men. The women watched the men, watched to see whether the break had come at last. The women stood silently and watched, and where a number of men gathered together, the fear went from their faces, and anger took its place. And the women sighed with relief, for they knew it was all right. The break had not come, and the break would never come as long as fear could turn to wrath. Tiny points of grass came through the earth, and in a few days, the hills were pale green with the beginning year. Chapter 30. In the boxcar camp, the water stood in puddles, and the rain splashed in the mud. Gradually, the little stream crept up the bank toward the low flat where the boxcars stood. On the second day of the rain, Al took the tarpaulin down from the middle of the car. He carried it out and spread it on the nose of the truck, and he came back into the car and sat down on his mattress. Now, without the separation, the two families in the car were one. The men sat together, and their spirits were damp. Ma kept a little fire going in the stove, kept a few twigs burning, and she conserved her wood. The rain poured down on the nearly flat roof of the boxcar. On the third day, the Wainwrights grew restless.
"Maybe we better go long,"
Mrs. Wainwright said, and Ma tried to keep them.
"Where'd you go and be sure of a tight roof?"
"I don't know, but I got a feeling we ought to go along."
They argued together, and Ma watched Al. Ruthie and Winfield tried to play for a while, and then they too relapsed into sullen inactivity, and the rain drummed down on the roof. On the third day, the sound of the stream could be heard above the drumming rain. Pa and Uncle John stood in the open door and looked out on the rising stream. At both ends of the camp, the water ran near to the highway, but at the camp it looped away so that the highway embankment surrounded the camp at the back, and the stream closed it in on the front. And Pa said,
"How's it look to you, John? Seems to me if that crick comes up, she'll flood us."
Uncle John opened his mouth and rubbed his bristling chin.
"Yeah," he said. "Might at that."
Rose of Sharon was down with a heavy cold, her face flushed and her eyes shining with fever. Ma sat beside her with a cup of hot milk.
"Here," she said, "take this here. Got bacon grease in it for strength. Here, drink it."
Rose of Sharon shook her head weakly.
"I ain't hungry."
Pa drew a curved line in the air with his finger.
"If we was all to get our shovels and throw up a bank, I bet we could keep her out. Only have to go from up there down to there.
Yep, Uncle John agreed. Might. Dunno if them other fellas wanna. They'd maybe rather move somewheres else. But these here cars is dry, Pa insisted. Couldn't find no dry place as good as this. You wait.
From the pile of brush in the car, he picked a twig. He ran down the catwalk, splashed through the mud to the stream, and he set his twig upright on the edge of the swirling water. In a moment, he was back in the car.
Jesus, you get wet through, he said.
Both men kept their eyes on the little twig on the water's edge. They saw the water move slowly up around it and creep up the bank. Pa squatted down in the doorway.
Coming up fast, he said. I think we ought to go talk to the other fellas, see if they'll help ditch up. Gotta get out of here if they won't.
Pa looked down the long car to the Wainwright end. Al was with them, sitting beside Aggie. Pa walked into their precinct.
Water's rising, he said. How about if we throwed up a bank? We could do her if everybody helped.
Wainwright said,
We was just talking. Seems like we ought to be getting out of here.
Pa said,
You been around? You know what chance we got of getting a dry place to stay.
I know, but just the same,
Al said. Pa, if they go, I'm a-going too. Pa looked startled.
You can, Al. The truck. We ain't fit to drive that truck.
I don't care. Me and Aggie gotta stick together.
Now you wait, Pa said. Come on over here.
Wainwright and Al got to their feet and approached the door.
See? Pa said, pointing. Just a bank from there and down to there.
He looked at his stick. The water swirled about it now and crept up the bank.
Be a lot of work, and then she might come over anyways, Wainwright protested.
Well, we ain't doing nothing. Might as well be working. We ain't gonna find us no nice place to live like this. Come on now, let's go talk to the other fellas. We can do her if everybody helps.
Al said,
If Aggie goes, I'm a-going too.
Pa said,
Look, Al, if them fellas won't dig, then we'll all have to go. Come on, let's go talk to them.
They hunched their shoulders and ran down the catwalk to the next car and up the walk into its open door. Ma was at the stove feeding a few sticks to the feeble flame. Ruthie crowded close beside her.
I'm hungry, Ruthie whined.
No, you ain't, Ma said. You had good mush.
Wished I had a box of Cracker Jack. There ain't nothing to do. Ain't no fun.
They'll be fun, Ma said. You just wait. Be fun pretty soon. Get a house and a place pretty soon.
Wished we had a dog, Ruthie said.
We'll have a dog. Have a cat, too.
Yellow cat?
Don't bother me. Ma begged. Don't go plaguing me now, Ruthie. Rosa Sharn's sick. Just you be a good girl a little while. They'll be fun.
Ruthie wandered, complaining away. From the mattress where Rose of Sharon lay covered up, there came a quick, sharp cry, cut off in the middle. Ma whirled and went to her. Rose of Sharon was holding her breath, and her eyes were filled with terror.
What is it?
Ma cried. The girl expelled her breath and caught it again. Suddenly, Ma put her hand under the covers. Then she stood up.
"Miss Wainwright?" she called.
"Oh, Miss Wainwright."
The fat little woman came down the car.
"Want me?"
"Look."
Ma pointed at Rose of Sharon's face. Her teeth were clamped on her lower lip and her forehead was wet with perspiration, and the shining terror was in her eyes.
"I think it's come." Ma said, It's early.
The girl heaved a great sigh and relaxed. She released her lip and closed her eyes. Mrs. Wainwright bent over her.
Did it kind of grab you all over, quick? Open up and answer me.
Rose of Sharon nodded weakly. Mrs. Wainwright turned to Ma.
Yep, she said. It's come. Early, you say?
Maybe the fever brang it.
Well, she ought to be up on her feet, ought to be walking around.
She can't,
Ma said. She ain't got the strength.
Well, she oughta.
Mrs. Wainwright grew quiet and stern with efficiency.
I help with lots, she said. Come on, let's close that door, Nearly. Keep out the draft.
The two women pushed on the heavy sliding door, boosted it along until only a foot was open.
I'll get our lamp, too, Ms. Wainwright said.
Her face was purple with excitement.
Aggie, she called, you take care of these here little fellows.
Ma nodded. That's right. Ruthie, you and Winfield go down with Aggie. Go on now.
Why?
They demanded.
'Cause you got to. Rosa Sharn gonna have her baby. I wanna watch, Ma. Please let me.
Ruthie, you get now. You get quick. There was no argument against such a tone. Ruthie and Winfield went reluctantly down the car. Ma lighted the lantern. Mrs. Wainwright brought her Rochester lamp down and set it on the floor, and its big circular flame lighted the boxcar brightly. Ruthie and Winfield stood behind the brush pile and peered over.
"Gonna have a baby, and we're a-gonna see," Ruthie said softly. "Don't you make no noise now. Ma won't let us watch. If she looks this-a-way, you scrunch down behind the brush. Then we'll see."
"There ain't many kids seen it," Winfield said.
"There ain't no kids seen it," Ruthie insisted proudly. "Only us."
Down by the mattress in the bright light of the lamp, Ma and Mrs. Wainwright held conference. Their voices were raised a little over the hollow beating of the rain. Mrs. Wainwright took a paring knife from her apron pocket and slipped it under the mattress.
"Maybe it don't do no good," she said apologetically. "Our folks always done it. Don't do no harm, anyways."
Ma nodded.
"We used a plow point. I guess anything sharp'll work, long as it can cut birth pains. I hope it ain't gonna be a long one."
"You feeling all right now?"
Rose of Sharon nodded nervously.
"Is it a coming?"
"Sure," Ma said. "Gonna have a nice baby. You just got to help us. Feel like you could get up and walk?"
"I can try."
"That's a good girl," Mrs. Wainwright said. "That is a good girl. We'll help you, honey. We'll walk with you."
They helped her to her feet and pinned a blanket over her shoulders. Then Ma held her arm from one side and Mrs. Wainwright from the other. They walked her to the brush pile and turned slowly and walked her back over and over, and the rain drummed deeply on the roof. Ruthie and Winfield watched anxiously.
"When's she gonna have it?" he demanded.
"Shh!
Don't draw 'em. We won't be let to look."
Aggie joined them behind the brush pile. Aggie's lean face and yellow hair showed in the lamplight, and her nose was long and sharp in the shadow of her head on the wall. Ruthie whispered,
"You ever saw a baby boar?"
"Sure," said Aggie.
"Well, when's she gonna have it?"
"Oh, not for a long, long time."
"Well, how long?"
"Maybe not for tomorrow morning."
"Shucks," said Ruthie.
"Ain't no good watching now, then. Look."
The walking women had stopped. Rose of Sharon had stiffened, and she whined with pain. They laid her down on the mattress and wiped her forehead while she grunted and clenched her fists. And Ma talked softly to her.
"Easy," Ma said. "Gonna be all right. All right. Just grip your hands. Now then, take your lip into your teeth. That's good. That's good."
The pain passed on. They let her rest a while and then helped her up again, and the three walked back and forth between the pains. Pa stuck his head in through the narrow opening. His hat dripped with water.
"What you shut the door for?"
he asked. And then he saw the walking women. Ma said,
"Her time's come."
Then we couldn't go if we wanted to."
"No."
"Then we got to build that bank."
"You got to."
Pa sloshed through the mud to the stream. His marking stick was 4 inches down. 20 men stood in the rain. Pa cried,
"We got to build her. My girl got her pains."
The men gathered about him.
Baby? Yeah, we can't go now.
A tall man said,
It ain't our baby. We can go.
Sure, Pa said. You can go. Go on. Nobody's stopping you. They's only 8 shovels.
He hurried to the lowest part of the bank and drove his shovel into the mud. The shovelful lifted with a sucking sound. He drove it again and threw the mud into the low place on the stream bank. And beside him the other men ranged themselves. They heaped the mud up in a long embankment, and those who had no shovels cut live willow whips and wove them in a mat and kicked them into the bank. Over the men came a fury of work, a fury of battle. When one man dropped his shovel, another took it up. They had shed their coats and hats. Their shirts and trousers clung tightly to their bodies. Their shoes were shapeless blobs of mud. A shrill scream came from the Jode car. The men stopped, listened uneasily, and then plunged to work again. And the little levee of earth extended until it connected with the highway embankment on either end. They were tired now, and the shovels moved more slowly. And the stream rose slowly. It edged above the place where the first dirt had been thrown. Pa laughed in triumph.
She'd come over if we hadn't built up, he cried.
The stream rose slowly up the side of the new wall and tore at the willow mat.
Higher, Pa cried. We got to get her higher.
The evening came and the work went on. And now the men were beyond weariness. Their faces were set and dead. They worked jerkily like machines. When it was dark, the women set lanterns in the car doors and kept pots of coffee handy. And the women ran one by one to the Jode car and wedged themselves inside. The pains were coming close now, 20 minutes apart, and Rose of Sharon had lost her restraint. She screamed fiercely under the fierce pains. And the neighbor women looked at her and patted her gently and went back to their own cars. Ma had a good fire going now, and all her utensils, filled with water, sat on the stove to heat. Every little while, Pa looked in the car door.
All right?
He asked. Yeah, I think so, Ma assured him. As it grew dark, someone brought out a flashlight to work by. Uncle John plunged on, throwing mud on top of the wall.
You take it easy, Pa said. You'll kill yourself. I can't help it. I can't stand that yelling. It's like when... I know, Pa said, but just take it easy.
Uncle John blubbered.
I'll run away. By God, I got to work or I'll run away.
Pa turned from him.
How's she stand on the last marker?
The man with the flashlight threw the beam on the stick. The rain cut whitely through the light.
Coming up. She'll come up slower now, Pa said. Got to flood pretty far on the other side. She's coming up, though.
The women filled the coffee pots and set them out again, and as the night went on, the men moved slower and slower, and they lifted their heavy feet like draft horses. More mud on the levee, more willows interlaced. The rain fell steadily. When the flashlight turned on faces, the eyes showed staring, and the muscles on the cheeks were welted out. For a long time, the screams continued from the car, and at last they were still. Pa said,
Ma'd call me if it was bore.
He went on shoveling the mud sullenly. The stream eddied and boiled against the bank. Then from up the stream there came a ripping crash. The beam of the flashlight showed a great cottonwood toppling. The men stopped to watch. The branches of the tree sank into the water and edged around with the current while the stream dug out the little roots. Slowly the tree was freed, and slowly it edged down the stream. The weary men watched, their mouths hanging open. The tree moved slowly down. Then a branch caught on a stump, snagged and held. And very slowly the roots swung around and hooked themselves on the new embankment.
The water piled up behind. The tree moved and tore the bank. A little stream slipped through. Pa threw himself forward and jammed mud in the break. The water piled against the tree, and then the bank washed quickly down, washed around ankles, around knees. The men broke and ran, and the current worked smoothly into the flat, under the cars, under the automobiles. Uncle John saw the water break through. In the murk, he could see it. Uncontrollably, his weight pulled him down. He went to his knees, and the tugging water swirled about his chest. Pa saw him go.
Hey, what's the matter?
He lifted him to his feet.
You sick? Come on, the car's as high.
Uncle John gathered his strength.
I don't know, he said apologetically. Legs give out, just give out.
Pa helped him along toward the cars. When the dike swept out, Al turned and ran. His feet moved heavily. The water was about his calves when he reached the truck. He flung the tarpaulin off the nose and jumped into the car. He stepped on the starter. The engine turned over and over, and there was no bark of the motor. He choked the engine deeply. The battery turned the sodden motor more and more slowly, and there was no cough. Over and over. Slower and slower. Al set the spark high. He felt under the seat for the crank and jumped out. The water was higher than the running board. He ran to the front end. Crankcase was underwater now. Frantically, he fitted the crank and twisted around and around, and his clenched hand on the crank splashed in the slowly flowing water at each turn. At last, his frenzy gave out. The motor was full of water, the battery fouled by now. On slightly higher ground, two cars were started and their lights on. They floundered in the mud and dug their wheels down until finally the drivers cut off the motors and sat still, looking into the headlight beams. And the rain whipped white streaks through the lights. Al went slowly around the truck, reached in, and turned off the ignition. When Pa reached the catwalk, he found the lower end floating. He stepped it down into the mud, underwater.
"Think you can make it all right, John?" he asked.
"I'll be all right. Just go on."
Pa cautiously climbed the catwalk and squeezed himself in the narrow opening. The two lamps were turned low. Ma sat on the mattress beside Rose of Sharon, and Ma fanned her still face with a piece of cardboard. Mrs. Wainwright poked dry brush into the stove, and a dank smoke edged out around the lids and filled the car with a smell of burning tissue. Ma looked up at Pa when he entered, and then quickly down.
"How is she?" Pa asked.
Ma did not look up at him again.
"All right, I think. Sleepin'."
The air was fetid and close with the smell of the berth. Uncle John clambered in and held himself upright against the side of the car. Mrs. Wainwright left her work and came to Pa. She pulled him by the elbow toward the corner of the car. She picked up a lantern and held it over an apple box in the corner. On a newspaper lay a blue, shriveled little mummy.
"Never breathed," said Mrs. Wainwright softly. "Never was alive."
Uncle John turned and shuffled tiredly down the car to the dark end. The rain whished softly on the roof now, so softly that they could hear Uncle John's tired sniffling from the dark. Pa looked up at Mrs. Wainwright. He took the lantern from her hand and put it on the floor. Ruthie and Winfield were asleep on their own mattress, their arms over their eyes to cut out the light. Pa walked slowly to Rose of Sharon's mattress. He tried to squat down, but his legs were too tired. He knelt instead. Ma fanned her square of cardboard back and forth. She looked at Pa for a moment, and her eyes were wide and staring, like a sleepwalker's eyes. Pa said,
We'd done what we could.
I know.
We worked all night, and a tree cut out the bank.
I know.
You can hear it under the car.
I know. I heard it.
Think she's gonna be all right?
I dunno.
Well, couldn't we did nothing?
Ma's lips were stiff and white.
No. There was only one thing to do, ever. And we done it.
We worked till we dropped in a tree. Rain's letting up some.
Ma looked at the ceiling and then down again. Pa went on, compelled to talk.
I dunno how high she'll rise. Might flood the car.
I know.
You know everything.
She was silent, and the cardboard moved slowly back and forth.
Did we slip up?
He pleaded.
Is there anything we could have did?
Ma looked at him strangely. Her white lips smiled in a dreaming compassion.
Don't take no blame. Hush. It'll be all right. These changes all over.
Maybe the water. Maybe we'll have to go.
When it's time to go, we'll go. We'll do what we got to do. Now hush. You might wake her.
Mrs. Wainwright broke twigs and poked them in the sodden, smoking fire. From outside came the sound of an angry voice.
I'm going in and see the son of a bitch myself.
And then, just outside the door, Al's voice.
Where you think you're going?
Going in to see that bastard Jode?
No, you ain't. What's the matter with you?
If we didn't have that fool idea about the bank, we'd have got out. Now our car is dead.
You think ours is burning up the road?
I'm a-going in.
Al's voice was cold.
You're gonna fight your way in.
Pa got slowly to his feet and went to the door.
All right, Al. I'm coming out. It's all right, Al.
Pa slid down the catwalk. Ma heard him say,
We got sickness. Come on down here.
The rain scattered lightly on the roof now, and a new risen breeze blew it along in sweeps. Mrs. Wainwright came from the stove and looked down at Rose of Sharon.
Dawn's a-coming soon, ma'am. Why don't you get some sleep? I'll set with her.
No, Ma said. I ain't tired.
In a pig's eye, said Mrs. Wainwright. Come on, you lay down a while.
She fanned the air slowly with her cardboard.
You've been friendly, she said. We thank you.
The stout woman smiled.
No need to thank. Everybody's in the same wagon. Suppose we was down. You to give us a hand.
Yes, Ma said. We would.
Or anybody.
Or anybody. Used to be the family was first. It ain't so now. It's anybody. Worse off we get, the more we got to do.
We couldn't have saved it.
I know, said Ma.
Ruthie sighed deeply and took her arm from over her eyes. She looked blindly at the lamp for a moment, and then turned her head and looked at Ma.
Is it Boar?
She demanded.
Is the baby out?
Mrs. Wainwright picked up a sack and spread it over the apple box in the corner.
Where's the baby?
Ruthie demanded. Ma wet her lips.
There ain't no baby. There never was no baby. We was wrong.
Shucks, Ruthie yawned. I wished it had been a baby. Mrs. Wainwright sat down beside Ma and took the cardboard from her and fanned the air. Ma folded her hands in her lap, and her tired eyes never left the face of Rose of Sharon, sleeping in exhaustion.
Come on, Mrs. Wainwright said. Just lay down. You'll be right beside her. Why, you'd wake up if she took a deep breath, even.
All right, I will.
Ma stretched out on the mattress beside the sleeping girl, and Mrs. Wainwright sat on the floor and kept watch. Pa and Al and Uncle John sat in the car doorway and watched the steely dawn come. The rain had stopped, but the sky was deep and solid with cloud. As the light came, it was reflected on the water. The men could see the current of the stream slipping swiftly down, bearing black branches of trees, boxes, boards. The water swirled into the flat where the boxcar stood. There was no sign of the embankment left. On the flat, the current stopped. The edges of the flood were lined with yellow foam. Pa leaned out the door and placed a twig on the catwalk, just above the water line. The men watched the water slowly climb to it, lift it gently, and float it away. Pa placed another twig an inch above the water and settled back to watch.
"Think it'll come inside the car?"
Al asked.
"Can't tell. There's a hell of a lot of water got to come down from the hills yet. Can't tell. Might start up to rain again."
Al said.
"I've been a-thinking. If she come in, everything'll get soaked."
"Yeah."
"Well, she won't come up more than 3-4 feet in the car, 'cause she'll go over the highway and spread out first."
"How you know?" Pa asked.
"I took a sight on her, off the end of the car."
He held his hand. "About this far up she'll come."
"All right," Pa said. "What about it? We won't be here."
"We gotta be here. Truck's here. Take a week to get the water out of her when the flood goes down."
"Well, what's your idea?"
"We can tear out the sideboards of the truck and build a kind of platform in here to pile our stuff and to set up on."
"Yeah. How'll we cook? How'll we eat?"
"Well, it'll keep our stuff dry."
The light grew stronger outside, a gray, metallic light. The second little stick floated away from the catwalk. Pa placed another one higher up.
"Sure climbing," he said. "I guess we better do that."
Ma turned restlessly in her sleep. Her eyes started wide open. She cried sharply in warning.
"Tom! Oh, Tom! Tom!"
Mrs. Wainwright spoke soothingly. The eyes flicked closed again, and Ma squirmed under her dream. Mrs. Wainwright got up and walked to the doorway.
"Hey,"
she said softly.
"We ain't gonna get out soon."
She pointed to the corner of the car where the apple box was.
"That ain't doing no good. Just cause trouble and sorrow. Couldn't you fellas kinda take it out and bury it?"
The men were silent. Pa said at last,
"Guess you're right. Just cause sorrow. Against the law to bury it."
"They's lots of things against the law that we can't help doing."
"Yeah."
Al said,
"We ought to get them truck sides tore off before the water comes up much more."
Pa turned to Uncle John.
"Will you take and bury it while Al and me get that lumber in?"
Uncle John said sullenly,
"Why do I gotta do it? Why don't you fellas? I don't like it."
And then,
"Sure, I'll do it. Sure I will. Come on. Give it to me."
His voice began to rise.
"Come on. Give it to me."
"Don't wake him up,"
Mrs. Wainwright said. She brought the apple box to the doorway and straightened the sack decently over it.
"Shovel's standing right behind you," Pa said.
Uncle John took the shovel in one hand. He slipped out the doorway into the slowly moving water, and it rose nearly to his waist before he struck bottom. He turned and settled the apple box under his other arm. Pa said,
"Come on, Al. Let's get that lumber in."
In the gray dawn light, Uncle John waded around the end of the car, past the Jode truck, and he climbed the slippery bank to the highway. He walked down the highway, past the boxcar flat, until he came to a place where the boiling stream ran close to the road, where the willows grew along the roadside. He put his shovel down, and holding the box in front of him, he edged through the brush until he came to the edge of the swift stream. For a time he stood watching it swirl by, leaving its yellow foam among the willow stems. He held the apple box against his chest, and then he leaned over and set the box in the stream and steadied it with his hand. He said fiercely,
"Go down and tell him. Go down in the street and rot and tell him that way. That's a way you can talk. Don't even know if you was a boy or a girl. Ain't gonna find out. Go on down now and lay in the street. Maybe they'll know then."
He guided the box gently out into the current and let it go. It settled low in the water, edged sideways, whirled around, and turned slowly over. The sack floated away, and the box caught in the swift water floated quickly away, out of sight behind the brush. Uncle John grabbed the shovel and went rapidly back to the boxcars. He sloshed down into the water and waded to the truck, where Pa and Al were working, taking down the 1x6 planks. Pa looked over at him.
"Get it done?"
"Yeah."
"Well, look," Pa said, "if you'll help Al, I'll go down the store and get some stuff to eat."
"Get some bacon," Al said. "I need some meat."
"I will," Pa said.
He jumped down from the truck, and Uncle John took his place. When they pushed the planks into the car door, Ma awakened and sat up.
"What you doing?"
"Gonna build up a place to keep out of the wet."
"Why?"
Ma asked.
"It's dry in here."
"Ain't gonna be. Water's coming up."
Ma struggled up to her feet and went to the door.
"We got to get out of here."
"Can't," Al said. "All our stuff's here. Truck's here. Everything we got."
"Where's Pa?"
"Gonna get stuff for breakfast."
Ma looked down at the water. It was only 6 inches down from the floor by now. She went back to the mattress and looked at Rose of Sharon. The girl stared back at her.
"How you feel?" Ma asked. "Tarred. Just tarred out."
"Gonna get some breakfast into you."
"I ain't hungry."
Mrs. Wainwright moved beside Ma.
"She looks all right. Come through it fine."
Rose of Sharon's eyes questioned Ma, and Ma tried to avoid the question. Mrs. Wainwright walked to the stove.
"Ma?"
"Yeah? What you want?"
"Is it all right?"
Ma gave up the attempt. She kneeled down on the mattress.
"You can have more," she said. "We done everything we knowed."
Rose of Sharon struggled and pushed herself up.
"Ma?" "You couldn't help it."
The girl lay back again and covered her eyes with her arms. Ruthie crept close and looked down in awe. She whispered harshly,
"She's sick, Ma. She gonna die?"
"Course not. She's gonna be all right. All right."
Pa came in with his armload of packages.
"How is she?"
"All right," Ma said. "She's gonna be all right."
Ruthie reported to Winfield,
"She ain't gonna die. Ma says so."
And Winfield, picking his teeth with a splinter in a very adult manner, said,
"I knowed it all the time."
"How'd you know?"
"I won't tell,"
said Winfield, and he spat out a piece of the splinter. Ma built the fire up with the last twigs and cooked the bacon and made gravy. Pa had brought store bread. Ma scowled when she saw it.
"We got any money left?"
"Nope," Pa said. "But we were so hungry."
"And you got store bread," Ma said accusingly.
"Well, we was awful hungry. Worked all night long."
Ma sighed.
"Now what we gonna do?"
As they ate, the water crept up and up. Al gulped his food and he and Pa built the platform. 5 feet wide, 6 feet long, 4 feet above the floor. And the water crept to the edge of the doorway, seemed to hesitate a long time, and then move slowly inward over the floor. And outside, the rain began again, as it had before, big, heavy drops splashing on the water, pounding hollowly on the roof. Al said, "Come on now, let's get the mattresses up. Let's put the blankets up so they don't get wet." They piled their possessions up on the platform, and the water crept over the floor. Pa and Ma, Al and Uncle John, each at a corner, lifted rows of Sharon's mattress with the girl on it and put it on top of the pile. And the girl protested, "I can walk. I'm all right." And the water crept over the floor, a thin film of it. Rose of Sharon whispered to Ma, and Ma put her hand under the blanket and felt her breast and nodded. In the other end of the boxcar, the Wainwrights were pounding, building a platform for themselves. The rain thickened and then passed away. Ma looked down at her feet. The water was half an inch deep on the car floor by now. "You, Ruthie, Winfield," she called distractedly. "Come get on top of the pile. You'll get cold." She saw them safely up, sitting awkwardly beside Rose of Sharon. Ma said suddenly, "We got to get out."
"We can't," Pa said. "Like Al says, all our stuff's here. We'll pull off the boxcar door and make more room to set on."
The family huddled on the platform, silent and fretful. The water was 6 inches deep in the car before the flood spread evenly over the embankment and moved into the cotton field on the other side. During that day and night, the men slept soddenly, side by side on the boxcar door. And Ma lay close to Rose of Sharon. Sometimes Ma whispered to her, and sometimes sat up quietly, her face brooding. Under the blanket, she hoarded the remains of the store bread. The rain had become intermittent now, little wet squalls and quiet times. On the morning of the second day, Pa splashed through the camp and came back with 10 potatoes in his pockets. Ma watched him sullenly while he chopped out part of the inner wall of the car, built a fire, and scooped water into a pan. The family ate the steaming boiled potatoes with their fingers, and when this last food was gone, they stared at the gray water, and in the night they did not lie down for a long time. When the morning came, they awakened nervously. Rose of Sharon whispered to Ma. Ma nodded her head. "Yes," she said. "It's time for it." And then she turned to the car door where the men lay. "We're a-gettin' out of here," she said savagely. "Gettin' to higher ground. And you're comin' or you ain't comin'. But I'm takin' Rose of Sharon and the little fellas out of here."
"We can't," Pa said weakly.
"All right, then. Maybe you'll pack Rose of Sharon to the highways anyways and then come back. It ain't raining now, and we're a-goin'."
"All right, we'll go," Pa said.
Al said, "Ma, I ain't goin'."
"Why not?"
"Well, Aggie, why, her and me." Ma smiled. "Course," she said. "You stay here, Al. Take care of the stuff. When the water goes down, why, we'll come back. Come quick, for it rains again," she told Pa. "Come on, Rose of Sharon. We're going to a dry place."
"I can walk."
"Maybe a little, on the road. Get your back bent, Pa." Pa slipped into the water and stood waiting. Ma helped Rose of Sharon down from the platform and steadied her across the car. Pa took her in his arms, held her as high as he could, and pushed his way carefully through the deep water, around the car, and to the highway. He set her down on her feet and held on to her. Uncle John carried Ruthie and followed. Ma slid down into the water, and for a moment her skirts billowed out around her. "Winfield, set on my shoulder. Al, we'll come back soon's the water's down." "Al," she paused, "If Tom comes, tell him we'll be back. Tell him be careful. Winfield, climb on my shoulder. There. Now keep your feet still." She staggered off through the breast-high water. At the highway embankment, they helped her up and lifted Winfield from her shoulder. They stood on the highway and looked back over the sheet of water, the dark red blocks of the cars, the trucks and automobiles deep in the slowly moving water, and as they stood, a little misting rain began to fall.
"We got to get along," Ma said. "Rosa Shawn, you feel like you could walk?"
"Kinda dizzy," the girl said. "Feel like I've been beat."
Pa complained.
"Now we're going. Where are we going?"
"I dunno. Come on. Give your hand to Rosa Shawn."
Ma took the girl's right arm to steady her, and Pa her left.
"Going someplace where it's dry. Got to. You fellas ain't had dry clothes on for 2 days."
They moved slowly along the highway. They could hear the rushing of the water in the stream beside the road. Ruthie and Winfield marched together, splashing their feet against the road. They went slowly along the road. The sky grew darker and the rain thickened. No traffic moved along the highway.
"We got to hurry," Ma said. "If this here girl gets good and wet, I don't know what'll happen to her."
"You ain't said we're at we're a-hurrying to," Pa reminded her sarcastically.
The road curved along beside the stream. Ma searched the land and the flooded fields. Far off the road on the left, on a slight rolling hill, a rain-blackened barn stood.
"Look," Ma said. "Look there. I bet it's dry in that barn. Let's go there till the rain stops."
Pa sighed.
"Probably get run out by the fella owns it."
Ahead beside the road, Ruthie saw a spot of red. She raced to it. A scraggly geranium gone wild, and there was one rain-beaten blossom on it. She picked the flower. She took a petal carefully off and stuck it on her nose. Winfield ran up to see.
"Let me have one," he said. "No, sir. It's all mine. I found it."
She stuck another red petal on her forehead, a little bright red heart.
"Come on, Ruthie. Let me have one. Come on now."
He grabbed at the flower in her hand and missed it, and Ruthie banged him in the face with her open hand. He stood for a moment, surprised, and then his lips shook and his eyes welled. The others caught up.
"Now what you done?" Ma asked. "Now what you done?" "He tried to grab my flower."
Winfield sobbed.
"I only wanted one to stick on my nose."
"Give him one, Ruthie."
"Leave him find his own. This here's mine."
"Ruthie, you give him one."
Ruthie heard the threat in Ma's tone and changed her tactics.
"Here," she said with elaborate kindness, "I'll stick on one for you."
The older people walked on. Winfield held his nose near to her. She wet a petal with her tongue and jabbed it cruelly on his nose.
"You little son of a bitch," she said softly.
Winfield felt for the petal with his fingers and pressed it down on his nose. They walked quickly after the others. Ruthie felt how the fun was gone.
"Here," she said. "Here's some more. Stick some on your forehead."
From the right of the road there came a sharp swishing. Ma cried,
"Hurry up. There's a big rain. Let's go through the fence here. It's shorter. Come on now. Bear on, Rosa Shawn."
They half-dragged the girl across the ditch, helped her through the fence, and then the storm struck them. Sheets of rain fell on them. They plowed through the mud and up the little incline. The black barn was nearly obscured by the rain. It hissed and splashed, and the growing wind drove it along. Rows of Sharon's feet slipped, and she dragged between her supporters.
"Pa, can you carry her?"
Pa leaned over and picked her up.
"We're wet through anyways," he said. "Hurry up. Winfield, Ruthie, run on ahead."
They came panting up to the rain-soaked barn and staggered into the open end. There was no door in this end. A few rusty farm tools lay about. a disc plow and a broken cultivator, an iron wheel. The rain hammered on the roof and curtained the entrance. Pa gently set Rose of Sharon down on an oily box.
God almighty, he said.
Ma said, maybe there's hay inside. Look, there's a door. She swung the door on its rusty hinges. They is hay, she cried. Come on in, you. It was dark inside. A little light came in through the cracks between the boards. Lay down, Rosa Sharn, Ma said. Lay down and rest. I'll try to figure some way to dry you off. Winfield said, Ma! And the rain roaring on the roof drowned his voice.
Ma!
What is it? What you want?
Look, in the corner.
Ma looked. There were two figures in the gloom, a man who lay on his back, and a boy sitting beside him, his eyes wide, staring at the newcomers. As she looked, the boy got slowly up to his feet and came toward her. His voice croaked,
You own this here?
No, Ma said, just come in out of the wet. We got a sick girl. You got a dry blanket we could use and get her wet clothes off? The boy went back to the corner and brought a dirty comfort and held it out to Ma. Thank you, she said. What's the matter with that fella? The boy spoke in a croaking monotone.
First he was sick, but now he's starving.
What?
Starving. Got sick in the cotton. He ain't et for 6 days.
Ma walked to the corner and looked down at the man. He was about 50, his whiskery face gaunt, and his open eyes were vague and staring. The boy stood beside her.
Your pa?
Ma asked.
Yeah. Says he wasn't hungry, or just et. Give me the food. Now he's too weak. Can't hardly move.
The pounding of the rain decreased to a soothing swish on the roof. The gaunt man moved his lips. Ma knelt beside him and put her ear close. His lips moved again.
Sure, Ma said. You just be easy. He'll be all right. You just wait till I get them wet clothes off'n my girl.
Ma went back to the girl.
Now slip 'em off, she said.
She held the comfort up to screen her from view, and when she was naked, Ma folded the comfort about her. The boy was at her side again, explaining.
I didn't know. He said he et, or he wasn't hungry. Last night I went and bust a window and stole some bread. Made him chew her down, but he puked it all up, and then he was weaker. Got to have soup or milk. You folks got money to get milk?
Ma said,
Hush, don't worry. We'll figure something out.
Suddenly the boy cried.
He's dying, I tell you. He's starving to death, I tell you.
Hush, said Ma. She looked at Pa and Uncle John standing helplessly gazing at the sick man. She looked at Rose of Sharon huddled in the comfort. Ma's eyes passed Rose of Sharon's eyes and then came back to them. And the two women looked deep into each other. The girl's breath came short and gasping. She said,
Yes.
Ma smiled.
I knowed you would. I knowed.
She looked down at her hands, tight locked in her lap. Rose of Sharon whispered,
Will you all go out?
The rain whisked lightly on the roof. Ma leaned forward and with her palm she brushed the tousled hair back from her daughter's forehead, and she kissed her on the forehead. Ma got up quickly. Come on, you fellas, she called. You come out in the tool shed. Ruthie opened her mouth to speak. Hush, Ma said. Hush and git. She herded them through the door, drew the boy with her, and she closed the squeaking door. For a minute, Rose of Sharon sat still in the whispering barn. Then she hoisted her tired body up,